Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest today is John McMurtry. It's always great to have John back. John is internationally recognized for so much, his writing, his research, his stalwart approach to standing up for what matters most. There's a bottom line that I like to use to describe it. Supporting right over wrong. Doesn't that sum up so much? Supporting right over wrong. And unfortunately, the people that run America, that run most other Western societies, maybe all of them, that certainly run Israel, they run too many countries. They don't support right over wrong. They deplore right, and they practice wrong. And my goodness, look what's going on in the Middle East now. I just can't stop writing about it. I put out a new article today. I titled it, Strategically Timed Syrian Massacre. Well, there were a lot of headlines about too early, a big one. I mean, there are killings and there are bombings and there's all kinds of violence going on every single day without end. Dozens of people are dying every day. What is it all about? Fingers are pointed the wrong way. That's another expression I like to use. Assad, the leader of Syria, an autocrat. His government is very autocratic, but it's not as ruthless a government as the ones in the Middle East calling for democracy in Syria. You want to know about democracy? You want to know about hypocrisy? Read what Saudi Arabia is saying, promoting democracy in Syria. Read what Bahrain is saying, promoting democracy in Syria. Dare I say, read what Israel, what America, what Britain, what France have to say. They don't know anything about democracy. They certainly don't practice it at home. But they want democracy in Syria. They ignore the fact that in May, there was a very legitimate parliamentary election. I mean, it really was legitimate. There were observers that saw it, and it was an excellent election. A couple of months before that, earlier in the year, I forget the precise month, a new constitution was drafted. It wasn't handed down to the people of Syria. It was put to a national referendum. There's never been a national referendum in America. There are some states that have referenda. Some. Even the results aren't always observed. California has a lot of referenda, but, you know, the people can say one thing, and the powers that be in the state can do what they damn please if they don't like the results of the referendum. Well, there's never been a national referendum in America. I don't know what countries have ever held this, especially on a constitution. The only other one I know about, because I wrote about it, was Venezuela, and they did it in two stages. They first asked the people of Venezuela if they wanted a new constitution, and overwhelmingly, I forget the percentage, but it was overwhelming, 80-90% said yes. And then the constitution was drafted, and it was put to a national referendum again. Let the people vote on it, up or down. Again, overwhelming endorsement of the constitution. And it's been so long since I wrote about it, I don't remember the percentage. But it was an overwhelming endorsement. That's impossible in America. Impossible in Britain, impossible in Israel. I can't imagine most any other country doing anything like this, especially for something as fundamental as a constitution. Anyway, we've got a raging war going on in Syria. It's no revolution. It's no revolution. I call it an insurgency, but it really isn't that either. It's largely an externally driven event. It's Western-generated. America, for at least the past decade or longer, targeted the regime in Syria for regime change. Why? Has nothing to do with its type of government. Has nothing to do with Bashar al-Assad. You know, you hear his name bashed around a lot. He's vilified. It's got nothing to do with him. It's got everything to do with the same thing it had to do with in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Libya. Anywhere you want to look, John, any country that is run by a government that thinks its own sovereignty comes ahead of America's gets targeted for regime change. It doesn't matter whether they're democratic, despotic, or anything in between. And that was the sin that these countries paid. So they've all been targeted for regime change. Well, Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Syria is next up in the queue, and then Iran. And that's not the end of it. Sudan's on the list. Hezbollah and Lebanon's on the list. I don't know if it's officially on the list I saw that General Wesley Cocke wrote about in his book, Four-Star General, Winning Modern Wars. He wrote about this stuff. Don't believe me. Believe Wesley Cocke. I'm certain Venezuela is on some list. John, welcome to the program. I could keep this thing up for the whole hour.
Well, I mean, two things I just might add to what you're saying, that it's expansionist, too. You know, it's not just one regime change after another. It fits into a global pattern. Any place that has not been already taken over is marked for complete takeover. We just see this expansion going on in places. For example, Syria was inconceivable to do this to before, but Syria is weakened, and that's always when they go, when a country is weakened. Syria also had a 50% rise, you don't hear much about this, a 50% rise in its oil findings. Syria also has border disputes with Turkey and so forth, and it's always an expansion. And in the background of this expansion, there's another player coming up along with the U.S. and NATO, who is a junior partner to it, and you've touched on it with you know, basically the kingdoms and oligarchies of oil that want democracy in Syria. It's so laughable, but it's done over and over again. One country you didn't touch on was Syria. Now, we have really a Sunni oligarchy kingdom take that's going on across the Middle East. It's hijacked the Arab Spring completely, and the most dictatorial countries are now shouting for democracy. And the one that you've really missed out here, I think, is Turkey. Turkey is rather surprising. Turkey has had a tremendous growth of GDP, that is, you know, aggregate sales, in its country in recent years, and it's become very powerful. You remember it was once the head of an empire. I think we have Turkey itself as part of this whole sort of alternative Muslim oligarchy kingdoms coming in as junior partners to the U.S. NATO takeover of everywhere in the world. So it's always an expansion. Now, while they've had a tremendous GDP rise, almost doubling in recent years, the people, the majority, have lost 21%, in their annual incomes. So it's a tremendously rapidly rising inequality in Israel, very much the neoliberal story, if you can call it neoliberal. It's really more,
Can I mention one thing?
Yes, please.
I drafted an article for tomorrow. There was a shocking story, actually three of them, on Haaretz today, and it talked about social protests that erupted last summer. Well, yesterday was the one-year anniversary, and there was a big, big protest in Tel Aviv, and a protester, and I wrote about a story that Haaretz covered, a protester self-immolated. I mean, there are lots of angry protesters, but to take it to that level is it's not unprecedented, but it is extremely rare. And he was an Israeli, and the Israeli government, in plain English, just screwed him over. He literally felt there was nothing else to live for. They put him through years of agony. I'll let you continue, but I called the title of my article.
Well, we had it in Greece, too. We've had this all over, and it's really... it's basically against the cancer money sequence cancer system, which is really what's lying behind it all. I mean, democracy is just its false mask, which is, they always do a reverse projection. They always say that the one who is standing in the way of the money sequence cancer system, which is globalizing, is the villain and is anti-democratic and so forth, while in fact the people inside these countries are themselves committing suicide, burning themselves to death because of the complete repression, and it's done by basically just depriving them of all their life means. First of all, by their wages being cut over and over and over again, and then by their social cut, their social sectors which support them, you know, any social programs and income security, health plans and so forth are cut too. And you see the same program going on everywhere. And it's interesting to see that Turkey's involved in this now too. And of course, Israel, Netanyahu, whose father was the secretary for the Stern Gang, he's very right wing on, again, part of the whole money sequence cancer system. Israel used to have a very progressive welfare system and a social state. It's all been stripped back too. So we see this pattern going across in an expansionist way everywhere. And then the very people who are leading it are the very people that are saying that the other societies must, who are not yet on side, they themselves must change, and the way they must change is to democratize. And what you ensure, like we know this, it's been going on, blaming opponents for having WMDs or blaming them for being terrorists and so forth. It's always a projection in correspondence to the strategic value of the country and the resistance to it and their helplessness of stopping it. And no one notices that the evidence for any terrorism or WMDs or anti-democratic repression and so forth pales beside what goes on from the U.S. leadership itself. Daily drone assassinations, war criminal occupations, destruction of homes, robbery of resources, and so on. It just never stops. And so you always project what you're doing onto the other side, and that's the grounds for attacking them. This is what I've diagnosed before as the reverse projection that goes on inside the cancer system. And it doesn't matter that when you do intervene, 95% of the civilians, of the victims are always civilians who have no part in the struggle. None of this matters. Tens of millions are protesting across continents doesn't matter, and so forth, as long as this system, this money sequence cancer system, expands and globalizes. Now, what bothers me in a way is that, I mean, in the sense that it's never, ever mentioned is, and you've mentioned it, of course, but never, ever mentioned in official discourses, that special forces from NATO and from the U.S., but also from Turkey and also from elsewhere, no doubt Israel is involved as well, special forces have led this whole thing. And this is just a standard thing. You have a so-called revolutionary despot, and then it starts somehow has a public infrastructure, somehow has things that you want, somehow hasn't gone along with the money sequence cancer. It's usually over oil, but not only oil. And then you have a sort of sucker negotiations going on between them and other countries, as to somehow they have got to reform in order to fit in. And then you go through the stages of it's a weakened state. You've already been through the negotiations and so forth, especially if you can get UN people in there. They get to spy and see what the military installations are. You get border allies involved. You've got all kinds of border allies, Israel here, which never seems to come into the conversation, as well as Turkey, right all the way down to Azerbaijan. And then you start the special forces. The special forces, that nothing would have happened here without those special forces. They're never, ever mentioned, and yet nobody denies that they exist. Right? It's just sort of a given that the special forces are in there running this revolution. No, not only do we never mention the special forces that are running it, I mean, you don't get the sorts of damages that are going on there, and of course all the damages being blamed on the Assad government, unless you do have special forces. You have these special forces. We know nothing about what they represent. They talk about a national council. Always there's a national council, just like in Libya. Now there's a national council of Libya, of Syria. We know nothing about these people. We know the only thing we do know about them is they've already agreed to a U.S. Program, which is basically for a cancer state. And these national council appointees were basically appointed by the U.S. and NATO, and they are hitch on to the special forces that are invading. And so basically what you've got here, Steve, I think, and I don't know whether you've mentioned this yet in your articles, but you have an ongoing war crime. is going on there in Syria from the West with their special forces and from the surrounding countries.
John,
with
have
their
I
special
ever
forces.
This
is a war crime. It's got all the ingredients of the war crime. You know, basically the very outrages they're talking about are caused by the war crimes of the special forces intervention, making up a government called the National Council that are just appointees of you that stand for nothing. And the only thing they do, we know they'll stand for, is a sectarian and money sequencing interest that will be a puppet of the larger powers.
John, if I could just read a couple of lines from the article that I put out this morning. This is the way I began my article. I called it, this was on the latest massacre, this Tremp's massacre. Hula and Kiba preceded it, the big ones. There's been this very heavy fighting going on in, I think, suburban Damascus today. But there's fighting going on in different parts of the country. But I began this article saying, insurgents are enlisted, armed, funded, trained, and directed by Western and regional special forces.
Yeah.
They decide strategy, targets, and timing. Armies need leadership to operate effectively. So do killer gangs. Special forces have tactical expertise. They're directing Washington's war on Syria. This is Washington's war on Syria.
Exactly.
And my next line is, they plan and lead attacks and bombings. And the Tremsa massacre that happened on Saturday, or was it Friday? On Friday, I believe. It was strategically timed at the same time that the Security Council was meeting to discuss alternate resolutions on Syria, the one that Russia and China want, and the one that Washington, Britain, France, Germany, and other NATO allies want. What they want is they want to get rid of Assad, and Russia and Syria and China want the Syrian people to decide how their country will be run, by whom, et cetera, and so on. And international law backs them up, obviously.
Then the media, what are they going to talk about? Have you ever even heard the word special forces or read the word special forces ever mentioned? I mean, this is the action on the ground, and it was the action, of course, on the ground in Libya. It was more clear there that, where they were being bombed from NATO planes from above. And that's, that'll be the direction they go if they have to. But has anybody mentioned that very valuable passage you just read to us now that you just wrote this morning about trained, directed, and orchestrated entirely by special forces from regional and NATO powers led by the U.S., that very valuable passage, have you read anywhere that's even indicated that there's anybody else involved except the brave Syrian people?
Oh, no, John.
I mean, isn't it amazing? I mean, it's so Orwellian. Not a peep, though it's very well known. I mean, you never say anything unless it's documented. And I've been, finding the same documentation, and you just never... And to me, this is really the key, more important than the special forces themselves, is the way the public discourse and representations, absolutely totalitarian, one-sided, so Orwellian in this way, they say nothing but bad about Syria or whoever it is that's the next victim of the global cancer system. They say nothing ever good about them, and they say nothing ever that's questionable about what they're doing, including the war criminal nature. They just have, and including our public, without advertising, CBC, I listen to, that's the only reading medium that I watch or listen to, is its news programs, and it's just about as bad as the others in the sense that they never, ever mention these things, and they just have a daily drumbeat of war, a daily drumbeat of war fever and hysteria, a daily drumbeat of totalitarian, one-sided reports that never, ever mention any of the relevant facts on the ground. It's so one-sided, it's so extreme, that it really, I guess I wonder why... Do they... can they honestly believe? I heard Hillary Clinton on the news program saying, you know, with Egypt, you know, that while the Egyptians have to work out a democracy for themselves and the rest of it, meanwhile, they're financing the generals that are overthrowing their parliament and so forth. And you just wonder, do they believe what they're saying? It's such a transparent shell game, but it's so universal across the Western NATO media in particular that it's exactly this pattern. It's obviously been strategically gamed to do this, but how does somebody like Hillary Clinton actually say these things she says when, you know, she was a sort of a decent liberal in the old days, and just transparently absurd things that are coming out of her mouth that are just part of the daily program of, you know, a complete shell game.
John, I'm so familiar with her outrageous comments because I quote her, and I quoted what she had to say, a fair amount of what she had to say about the latest massacre. It is absolutely, you need new adjectives to invent to describe just how outrageous she really is. And she goes after anybody who opposes U.S. policy. She's more anti-Russia than I ever remember anybody being back in the Cold War days. I mean, Russia is supposedly an ally now, another capitalist country. We do business with each other, and she absolutely rages against Russia, and she against China as well. And of course, we, in America, they still call China communist China. My God, China is as capitalist as America. And this goes on and on, but she really is extreme. And the only one in government in America now that matches her is this outrageous UN envoy, this Susan Rice. Mm-hmm. I mean, she froths at the mouth when she vilifies somebody like Assad. And this
Notice
is the kind
it's
of
coming
person.
from women, too, eh?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Part of the diabolical nature of the propaganda machine.
Nothing feminine about either one of them.
Yeah, but they use women, you see. They just step, they use the stepping stones of the progressive movements that have happened in the world. For example, the democratic movement itself, or women's freedom and rights and equality and so forth. They always use those as stepping stones and props for their propaganda and for the, you know, this expansionist, really murderous system. Like it seems to be almost become more definitely, more transparently, and more systematically on a totalized basis murderous. You know, in Vietnam, we had, well, of course, we had all the other things going on in Latin America. Maybe it isn't more murderous. It's just that it appears to be, you know, after all, this is these are Democrats doing this. After all, this is the liberal Clintons that are doing it. But it makes no, or it's Obama. It makes no difference who's in there. They just behave in accordance with the same mechanical pattern. And that's where, you know, one goes to, that's why I do go to a diagnosis of a deeper structural problem that's involved, of which these people are just the transient faces. One of the good news that stories, that just to get a bit of good news in here, is I don't know whether you read that a former three-time Minister of Economy and Finance of Italy, you know, apparently a very sort of official character, also a professor of law and economics, Giulio Tremonti. He says in his emergency, this book called Emergency Exit, he says, Ending the Tyranny of Finance, he classifies what's going on, and of course I'm not going to go again into the cancer diagnosis. All of this is consistent with it, but his diagnosis, and this is one I initially used myself, that it's financial fascism, and he says white fascism. Now, this is a very leading member of the European elite who's been a cabinet minister over 12 years, and he's saying it's fascism and it's financial fascism.
Well, I had not read that, John. That is very interesting.
Yeah, so just look up Emergency Exit. It'll be all over the, it is all over the net now because this book's being, it just came out. It's just, it's being translated all over the place.
I'm sorry, Emergency what, John?
Emergency Exit.
Emergency exit.
Yeah, emergency exit. Yeah, and so he's saying we've got to exit this system. So he's agreeing. Here's a cabinet minister of Italy, long-term cabinet minister of Italy, who's agreeing basically with the framework that we all agree upon, and notice from totally different places of life, especially there. What we agree on is that this system is corrupt and murderous and has to be ended, or has to be, in his way of understanding, and I think it's probably a good way of understanding it, it's less scary, is that you have to exit it the way Latin America has exited it, that we have to exit this system. And here he, and he, you know, one of the first things, by the way, he says, which everybody now with any mind at all says you have to, the first step you take is restoration of Glass-Steagall, you know, which is basically, you know, financial controls are being reimposed that had worked for 30 years or 40 years until we were all overrun. Now, I responded to what he wrote by saying, you know, it is fascism, and I wrote an article back in 1984 called Fascism and Neoconservatism, Is There a Difference? So I agree with the diagnosis, but just in looking at the nature of the problem, is, you know, we do have a system that's pervasive, fascist in method, and it's white racist in effect. I don't think that's it's built to be, because, you know, of course, they're always bringing in black faces and women's faces and everything else. But it has a white racist effect, and that's going on in Europe right now. You notice it's Southern Europe, eh? Which elite Italians refer to the blacks or the niggers of Italy. So there is a white racism at work here. So I agree with the fascist diagnosis. But what's the fascists, you know, they said, I mean, Mussolini's phrase was think with the blood. And, you know, that it's an eternal war, no pretense of democracy and no pretense of anything else. And these people don't think with the blood at all. They only think in bloodless money numbers. That's what's behind the whole thing, behind all the stuff that's going on in Syria right now or wherever it might be. It might be Somalia, or it might be, you know, the coup d'etat that happened in Honduras, and now we have another coup d'etat in Paraguay, which actually was run by, in a fascist way. But this system, it doesn't really have any blood to it. It's just numbers without ground, and it's just always money maximizing, sequencing, and any number of bizarre Byzantine forms in huge masses of exponential margins, basically ripping off every productive sector in the world. Now they're on to food, and now they're on to water, too, with their derivatives and so forth, and completely distorting and causing starvation and so forth through it. So it's the opposite of thinking with the blood, and it's not really based on shock, as you know, Naomi Klein has argued. Shock is just one of the things that it exploits. It basically, though, the ultimate structure behind this doesn't flaunt shock except as a punishment, or except when things come to the crunch, that then we're going to demonstrate that this is what happens to anybody who gets in the way. Usually it's disguises and masks everything in garbled grays, you know. It's it has no committed life function at all, not even to a master race. It just has its fictive money tokens multiplying, exponentially multiplying everywhere in every way. And, of course, that's what's breaking the world, is that all this has been taken away from the people, both at the level of their wages and at the level of their social programs. And so it goes, it's just basically every single monstrous thing that we go on to see, I can say we can decode that as returning money faster in bigger volumes to transnational money sequences, including what's going on in Syria. This is just the front face of something really much more sinister than fascism. So fascism is true of it. I guess we better break.
Yeah. Break time, bottom of the hour. The time really goes by so fast. Let's take a quick break, John, and then we'll come right back. Welcome back. On with John McMurtry, talking about the dismal state of the world. There are a few bright lights out there, but we sure have to turn them on if we want to get a lot of them going. John, I'll mention one other thing briefly. I always check a Syrian media site that puts out some very good reports. You can pick up, you get a sense of things by the tone of what's said. And the tone of in the Western major media, my God, I mean, it is so biased, one-sided, and slanted. And the Syrian media on Sana state media, they must be doing something good, John, because yesterday they were blocked part of the day, and today all day, I just checked it just before airtime, it still was blocked. It was blocked very early this morning. It's been blocked right up to airtime of this program. And that just tells me that they're putting out information that Western states, America, and the others involved in the war against Syria, they don't want the information they're reporting coming out.
What is that site, Steve?
Sana, S-A-N-A, and I Google it, Sana State Media. And,
is that one word or three words?
Oh, three words. I Googled three words. I don't think you can get it just by Googling Sana. I think that's the name of some people. But Sana State Media.
Right.
And when it's operating, I got word to somebody I know who has contacts in Syria, and I told this person who is in the region right now, Sana is blocked. Can you contact your people, and can you tell them that? And hopefully they can get it operating again. She thought they could do it, but it might take some time, whatever was done to it. I mean, they really could have corrupted the site, and they'll have to do a lot of work to get it back up again, but I certainly hope they will.
You know, what I said about the totalitarian one-sidedness, anything at all that comes out. I mean, we've had experiences, I know you've had experiences with blocks that were, I think once you identify the block happening, it will take it off, in our case, because we were in the belly of the beast, so to speak. But elsewhere, of course, they're just going to take it out, even though hardly anybody hears it. It's very important. It's almost like a post-hypnotic trance that the world is held in, and that's what this propaganda drumbeat does, is it keeps people, it hypnotizes people into a kind of a trance, you know, the 2 minutes hate trance. And I think that the key to all this, you know, I mentioned already the expansionism. It isn't just one regime change after another, and always a regime change that will be in the interests of transnational money, corporate money sequencing. It's not just that that's going on. This is almost the worst part of it, is that it diverts attention from, even if you weren't going to get anything out of it in the case of Syria, supposing Syria manages to hold on, supposing Sana State Media and the facts that it has get out through people like you, and I mean, just as a philosopher's hypothesis, imagine if they succeeded in resisting this. What has they succeeded at, even if Syria has succeeded, is not only have they weakened Syria even more, and not only have they made it subject to take over, you know, it'll just work on a different operations. But other than the logistics of the actual site of the conflict where we have special forces orchestrating it, we have the digression and the diversion entirely from the actual problems that are going on at home. I mean, just that is a single operation in itself. I don't care, let's say we're sitting with the gamers, the strategic game maximization. We don't care whether Syria goes up or goes down, but it sure keeps the folks' attention off the disaster. The disaster, unprecedented since the Depression and the war, worse in its global implications and how deep it goes. Worse.
Well, I
we don't care,
John.
As long as the people have their minds off that. They can go on, we can externalize the blame onto, I mean, that's the oldest trick in the book. But that's the one that worries me here most of all, is because we have nothing but disaster in the U.S. and in the NATO countries and in Europe and in virtually every one of the allied countries involved in this this war criminal attack on Syria and also on Iran, there's every one of those countries have really bad problems going on, and the whole, above all, the system has a problem. This system does not work. That's why Giulio Tremonti, this Italian cabinet minister, says we have to have an emergency exit. Even at the top of the European pyramid of strategic planning and so forth, they are recognizing the system does not work. The system is a ongoing catastrophe, and not just at the human level, at the whole level of life capital bases of life on Earth itself. It is utterly catastrophic, and it only multiplies in its damages and destructions every day. If we do nothing else, say the strategic planners, if we do nothing else but then to keep people's minds off what's in fact happening, because it doesn't work any longer. It is very transparent. This system is it is the greatest world disaster in history. We just keep their minds off it by blaming this one or that one, and at the same time we have a chance of expanding it further, because of course it always has to keep expanding in order to survive.
John, I agree with you that I think the economic disaster that we're going through now is the worst in history. And I have an article that I wrote yesterday. I'm going to hold it. I plan to get it out today, but if there's something that has an urgency to it, then I will get it. I will put it aside and get the more time-sensitive stuff out. So I did that this morning. I've got two more for tomorrow, and I'll hold this one. This was an article on The Economy that had a lot of stuff in it, but I quoted one U.S. Market analyst who wrote about the man he called the smartest man in Europe I know. Now, those were his words, and he's talking about on economic and financial issues. And he took a trip over, and he visited with him and spent a good deal of time with him, and he scared the devil out of this American analyst. And the European analyst basically said, I mean, we really have a disaster in our hands. He said the powers that be in Europe, the ECB, and the other financial interests, the big banks and so on, all working together.
Yeah.
In his words, they will pull every trick in the book to keep this dirty game going as long as possible. But the longer they keep it going, the worse this thing festers and gets. And there's a terrible end game to this down the road.
Yeah.
And, you know, nobody knows when it's going to come and so on. But the longer they put off the inevitable by these dismal policies, there will be a crash that will be remembered if the world survives, John. This one will be remembered millennia from now.
Well, if the world still has a life system that's permitted to exist, because it's structured to attack all life organization. That's the most disturbing thing about it. It's structured that way to attack. And they are pulling every dirty. I mean, I don't know whether you read Ellen Brown's thing about the agreement with Greece, where she just, this emergency fund they have, which basically allows them to take, by fiat, they can take any amount of money when it's unlimited from any national sovereign government they want to any degree they want, and they can't say anything about it. That it's just one way. It's like, you know, after the Wall Street crash, when the head of Goldman Sachs got up there and said, you know, just started giving orders, you'll do this and you don't have that right or this. And not only that, but this emergency fund has insulated against any lawsuit against it, any of its actions, any of its operations, any of its officers, any liability whatsoever. I mean, this is setting up at the central basis. This is just what they're setting up now. I mean, it's just it's worse than anything you've probably read if you read the inner workings of the Third Reich, about the absolutist powers they're guaranteeing to themselves over the budgets of every nation. And then in Greece, who's the fall guy, only has a few percent of the GDP of Europe, but of course, it's going to, if you have an end of Greece in the euro, then you have an end of the euro, and that's an end of Europe, all these this crazy talk. Meanwhile, they're telling Greece, it's part of the agreement, and I don't know whether you've observed this, but part of the agreement is that the people who have, because one of their big problems is avoiding taxes, and I want to get on to the Supreme Court decision on taxes, by the way, is the rich avoiding taxes there. And so one of the things to bring Greece back into growth in its austerity program is you can't prosecute tax avoiders at the top. They actually have it. Now, it's always in the gray garbled language of the banks, but it's basically you have to lay off tax avoidance. You can't prosecute it. And another one is you cannot continue to monitor price hikes that are in oil and energy and other places that are predatory price hikes. You can't monitor them anymore. That you don't have the money to do it. And furthermore, foods that are unlicensed to sell or goods that are unlicensed to sell, you must allow them to be sold, including baby food, for example. These are the sorts of things that they're doing to Greece. So what the European analyst is discussing here is just, it's right in their documents. I mean, they will go to any lengths. It just, the problem is the media, including even the ones you think are progressive like the Guardian Weekly, never, ever report any of this, what's actually going on. They think the money's flowing straight to the publics of Greece and Spain and so forth. What is happening, of course, is all the money ever since the Wall Street crash, this is the biggest meta story, ever since the Wall Street crash, everybody is losing money in their wages, losing money in their social sectors, losing money in everything that serves life, and this is again why the cancer model. They're all losing it. Why? On the micro level and the macro level, it's to pay the banks that have lost, who have caused it all. All this money has to come out of somewhere. Where is it going to come out of? Unless you're going to have inflation. You can't just put it into the world system of currencies in huge trillions amount without inflation. And that's the one thing the money party most of all hates is inflation, because it lowers the value of the money assets they have. So if you're not going to have inflation in the U.S. system or the world system through all the money that's going out to the private banks, which they cause their own downfall, all that money's got to come out of somebody's hide. This is the inner law of carcinogenic motion of what's going on, is that all that money demand has to come out of the system somehow if you aren't going to have inflation. We haven't had inflation, so it's going to come out of your hide. That is if you're a worker, that is if you're a pensioner, that is if you're a public sector worker, that is if you're on minimum wage, whatever it is that actually is a living person or for a life capital basis. All of that is what they hit on, and again, that's why the carcinogenic diagnosis. And the disaster is now so built in, and it has been built in as we recognize, but that one I just mentioned about the inflation in the system, unless you take it out of people's hides, that's the meta story, and that's the inner law of the carcinogenic advance. And that one, I don't know anybody who's even identified it, although it's probably the most obvious thing of all.
Oh, indeed so, John. And I mean, this goes to this isn't discussed or explained properly. People have no idea about any of this stuff going on. And there is a ray of good news, John, and I just hope it keeps coming. But I mean, I rail against the stuff that comes out through the major media, and I just follow I follow the U.S. print media, the main ones, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, and they're probably the leading broadsheets in the country. Once in a while, I look at Time Magazine, occasionally something else, occasionally Chicago Tribune. I don't buy any of this stuff. They just publish trash. But some of the good news is. Newspapers are having a very, very hard time, and that's an old story. But U.S. television, and this stuff gets reported online, if not in the major media, you can certainly pick up stories online about this. that U.S. television news is being less watched today. People, they're still getting a majority of the people in the country. They're still able to buffalo most people. But
how much has it gone down, Steve?
The numbers have gone down considerably, including the bellwether, Fox News. Can you imagine Fox News being the most watched news in America?
Yeah.
I mean, that is absolutely, it's mind-boggling to think that, because Fox News has no news. There is no news on Fox News.
Yeah, well, this is the dementia correlative of the cancer system. Completely disordered, deranged.
Oh, it is. But they're losing viewers, John.
Yeah, that's
a good
sign.
If this can keep up, and I've said this a number of times in my writing, there's one major industry in the world, and I like to think about America because America has the biggest one, the media, the corporate media, the scoundrel media that I call them.
Yeah, that's a good term.
There's one industry that ordinary people can shut down, and there's not a thing these people can do about it. Stop buying their publications, tune out their TV programs, and they will wither and die, and they have no defense against this. It's so easy, John.
I went on to that program with the Iraq war crime. That's it. I'm out. You're not, I mean, I'll know all the information. You don't get any information really from them. It's just unplug from it because it's toxic. It's toxic, misinformative, and it actually costs you money. I can't believe people pay money for it. You know, it's like paying money for the advertising flyer on your doorstep, only it's worse because it's full of toxic stuff. Talking about Fox News and it going down, I may agree with that's a good sign. My only concern is that what replaces it is a complete cynicism and anomie. You know, just total alienation. They don't believe in anything anymore, and this is a dying, you know, a dying culture. That's my, you know, flip or negative side of it. What I think is interesting, just connecting with Fox News, because I bet you they've gone berserk over this. The decision of the Supreme Court, led by its Chief Justice, to allow Obamacare. And, you know, basically the key that they're bringing up, and whatever you want to say about it, I mean, you know, it's a huge injection of money into the scoundrel insurance companies, the HMOs and pharmaceutical companies that are just, you know, bleeding the people dry. You know, that's one of the real big problems, and all you do is finance them forever. The good news of it is that he said in this judgment, indeed this is the basis of his judgment, because the way they've defunded the whole social project of America and of everywhere else, you know, what's in the interest of actually us people together, and what's in the interest of our common life grounds and our common life capital and our programs and our knowledge bases and all of that have been cut back. Anything in common is, anything unpriced for profit is cut back. The key way of doing that is through taxes. That is getting rid of taxes at every level. That's why these people are so rich. As you remember, when we were boys, you paid 95% at a certain point of your earnings over certain millions of dollars for taxes. And not too many people disagreed with it. It just seemed just. Well, Roberts, and I bet you, well, I know he's being attacked by the right, but he said that the key term was the conceded, complete, and all-embracing tax power of government.
John, did you hear the dirty story about Roberts? And I don't know if it's true or not, but it's been reported. And the story that's going around
is that after this judgment?
He wrote both versions of
Oh, yeah, no, I read that, yeah.
I don't know what his game is.
Well, I mean, I know what his game is. It's the same shell game as everybody else. Only this time he came down where he had to come down if he wasn't, you know, I mean, it may have been, in a way, Machiavellian, that if this court rules against the Affordable Health Care Act, you know, where you have 50 million, a quarter of the population, a third of the population without health care, and you're in the most expensive system in the world, and on and on, then you know, it's the third strike. You know, he's out. Or the, no one will believe his Supreme Court anymore. And so they were saying he's Chief Justice, so he has to. He can't let this one go after having let the election, you know, stolen the election from the Democrats, number one, and after having given all future elections to corporate money to control, number two. If he'd gone against any sort of public health program, however bad it is, that would have been a problem for him. And he was aware of that, aware of it, and for the court. And the other, and so he... It fits into his program since he's, you know, he's been a Republican functionary from day one. Served as, you know, Republican, you know, just basically a go-to guy as a lawyer. And it fits that program that, you know, you don't pay any taxes at all. Taxes are slavery. Because that, you know, that vision of America, which is all too true and all too deep of it, is that the only thing that exists is me. And therefore, not, there is nothing other than me, and anything that taxes me, my money, is slavery or is an attack on my existence. It's coercion and all the rest of it. So that's why he wrote against the Obamacare judgment. He was part of it. But then he realized that the big picture was this thing is coming apart. He was aware, like the analysts in Europe, this system does not work. This system is coming apart at the seams, and it's destroying cumulatively everything, every life support condition we've got.
John, it really is, and even the healthcare bill, it leaves millions of people out. It lets the giant healthcare providers literally rip people off. You know, you can't turn people down.
Of course, and that may be reasons why he voted for it, because he's got pharma money behind him, and HMO money.
Well, John, they wrote out the ability of these big companies to deny people because of pre-existing conditions, but they didn't stop them from charging these people any damn amount they want. So they can price, they can write them out by simply making the care they offer unaffordable to them. So there's no change whatsoever.
Yeah, that's.
And the tip-off, when the bill passed Congress in the first place, John, the tip-off was the giant healthcare provider stocks all rose. Especially the insurance company.
It's a big money fund pork barrel forever for them.
Yeah. Oh, it sure is. But this is only
now,
one of
them. Now, is there, Steve, I don't know as much, I think, about this as you do. Is there, how many people, you know, when they have a pre-existing condition, there must be some fail-safe fallback condition that says if you have an income of below such and such, you are going to get the care anyway.
Well, we have Medicaid, John, but they're hacking away at that, too.
Yeah.
And we only have 2 minutes left, so I want to let you wrap it up. But there are all kinds of holes in the system, John, and at the end of the year, there's a so-called grand bargain between Republicans and Democrats that they're going to cut hell out of what's left of America's social contract. They're going to do it, I think, over a number of years, maybe a decade, but they've already agreed to $2 or $3 trillion. They're going to agree to a lot more. They're going to leave defense untouched. They're going to leave the bankers untouched. They're going to leave the corporate subsidies untouched. They're going to leave the tax cuts for the rich untouched. They're going to lower corporate taxes, and they're going to hammer ordinary people, including food stamps and stuff like this. That's the grand bargain, John.
Well, I think you made a pretty good summary there, Steve. That's all part of what this system does not work. This system is catastrophic. This system gets worse in its irreversible damages the longer it goes on. The minimum required, as our Italian Minister of Economy has advised us, he's true, is an emergency exit from it. We have to exit from it. Everybody with any mind or any understanding of what's going on knows we have to exit from this system. How do we exit from this system? Well, there are the obvious things like restoring Glass-Steagall, which he starts with. You know, one of the ideas that has floated recently about how Europe itself is going to get out of it, but it's also, of course, the states as well, is a Marshall Plan.
Oh, indeed. John,
and
we are
the Marshall
out of
time. Plan, though, nobody's recognizing that was all public sector. There was no for-profit banks involved.
Oh, indeed, John.
And
I wish we could go on, but the band has struck up, and we are out of time.
Yeah.
And the only thing I can do is thank you and look forward to next month and remind my listeners that, of course, we're on every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time and on weekends at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And with guests like John McMurtry, my goodness, do I even have to say, make it a regular habit. Thanks, John.
Thank you, Steve. Bye, folks.